1, 2, 3.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the podcast that builds biographical bridges between our guests and your ears using the songs that have fused into their memories. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. My guest today is a name you might recognize if this is not your first time around with us. Dave, otherwise known as Dave Cowan, is the co-creator of our totally awesome theme song on this show. Triple D was born in Chicago, where he grew up in the burbs and started playing side drum for the Chicago Highlanders Bagpipe Band when he was 13. He ran away from home when he was 17 and formed a band called Clear Eyes. He then put together the Wayfaring Strangers, which was a five-piece acoustic college band in Wisconsin. He then moved on to solo singer-songwriting about 25 years ago. The dude is a human jukebox and still plays to this day. He's also made a bunch of YouTube videos over the years if you want to check them out. Dave met the other co-creator of our theme song, musician and producer Stick Martin, almost a decade ago and has made several full production recordings with him. Currently spends his time between music projects, snowbirding between Florida and various places up north. Dave's a snowbird now, geez. And union stagehanding for the Tampa St. Pete IATSE Local 321. Oh, and he and I were roommates once upon a time. Shout out to the No Hassle Castle gang. Anyway, I know for certain Dave can spin a yarn or two, so this ought to be fun times. And here we go. Hey there, Dave. Long time no see.
Hey, Mike.
It's been way too long.
Yeah, it's been a while. We're old.
What happened?
How long have I been asleep?
Oh, so old.
Yeah.
Remember, do you remember when we used to come in here on the weekends and record?
I do, but the studio has changed its look a lot, and it looks more like Cape Canaveral when you first walk in with all the TV screens and stuff.
That's true. We're trying to present a high-tech face.
It looks very high-techy, yes, for sure.
Okay, so I've known you for a long time. We lived together. I don't know the I ran away from home when I was 17 story, so what's up with that?
Well,
that's where we're starting.
My parents grew up in the city of Chicago, and that's where I was born. And when I was 1 year old, we moved out to the suburbs. I think my parents wanted security away from the city. And so I was in the middle of a suburb where my biggest problem was really boredom. What was the question again?
Why'd you run away from home?
Oh, because of boredom. And my parents, you know, would keep grounding me and saying, you can't do this and you can't do that. And finally, I think my first escape attempt when I was on a big wheel, you know. And eventually, you know, between me and my parents, the animosity built up because I was a teenager. And eventually I had a car waiting, and on the third attempt when I was 17, I got the heck out of there.
And where'd you go?
Eventually I rented an apartment in another suburb, and then kind of from there went to Wisconsin.
Was Clear Eyes a Wisconsin band, or was Clear Eyes a Chicago Birds band?
Well, I went to Palatine High School, which is in a suburb of Illinois, and I was in a band with some guys named John Cadillacek and Jeff Sachs. John Cadillacek is known for a band that's called Dark Star Orchestra,
mm-hmm.
and I took him to his first Grateful Dead show, actually, and he kind of picked up the ball and ran with it, and now is kind of what I would call a Jerry Garcia impersonator. He sounds just like him and plays just like him. That was our first band, but that band broke up, and then I moved with our bass player to his parents' cabin in Wisconsin, because when you're in the suburbs of Chicago, you're stuck between either going into the city, which was very expensive and a lot of people, or going the other way, which seemed like going with the wind to where there was open space. And also our band, we were kind of like a big fish in a small pond.
The Wayfaring Strangers?
Yeah, we suddenly found plenty of places we could play, whereas when we were trying to go to Chicago, sometimes we would have to actually pay money to play in places, you know, just to be seen or heard.
So how long was were the Wayfaring Strangers
about
around?
10 years. We would play in Wisconsin during the summer, and then we had two full-size Chevy vans and would drive to Texas, Austin, Texas, for in the winter. We did that for a couple winters. We met another band called Lonely Child down there, and then we would bring them up to Wisconsin in the summertime. And so I've been kind of trying to pull off this snowboarding thing for, you know, 20 years.
Well, I think after 20 years, that means you're pulling it off.
I'm trying. You know, it's different every time. I've just been up in Wisconsin living in my buddy's basement and playing some music with him. And I'm kind of having a reunion with a lot of these people that I used to know in the Wayfaring Strangers.
So what was the music around you as a kid? Were your parents musically inclined? Were they playing tunes for you? Like, what was being played when you were little around you that was out of your control?
My dad's dad was in the Houston Symphony Orchestra, and I think because of that, my dad didn't really like music. My mom was big in the Beatles and Elvis and stuff like that, and that's where I started listening to records, little 45s and stuff. And that's kind of, my mom was really the one who played the radio and stuff. My dad was like, if we were in the car, he wouldn't even turn on the radio.
No, he like was an anti because of his dad.
Because I think because he grew up in a musical environment, he, in order to rebel from that, he had to do something besides music. And I mean, he did go on, when I was in the bagpipe band as a teenager, my dad actually picked up the bagpipes at age 50 and had a wild hair and started learning them. And he's the one that actually got me from playing in like the school band as a drummer into a bagpipe band.
So drums first, then guitar?
Yeah. What happened, the bagpipe band, when you play drums, you hold one hand one way and one the other way, and I'm left-handed. So when you got judged in the bagpipe band. So when they would look down the row, even though I was playing very well, my hands looked different, and they judged against us. And then the band came to me and said, you have to relearn everything right-handed. And that's when I said, I don't want to do this military-style music. I want to play rock and roll and play guitar. And that's kind of when
What was your first guitar?
Switched. It was an Ibanez right-handed guitar that I had to string upside down. And my buddy John Cadillac, who was in like the Further band that played the new Grateful Dead grouping, he got me started on how to tune a guitar and really got me going. You know, I had one from the ages of about 16 to 18, but I never knew how to tune it or anything. And it wasn't until I moved out of the house that he kind of taught me how to actually start to play it. And then I would go to the library and get the tablature for all this, you know, the Eagles songbook, the Led Zeppelin songbook.
Right, right.
And the tab was something I could read regardless of if you're left-handed or right-handed. It's just like a little map of where your fingers should go. So that's kind of how I learned music. I never had the theory.
What's your earliest musical memory, if you have to think back as deep as you can?
Well, it goes to one of those songs and one of the three songs I picked out. And it would be that Carole King, that Chicken Soup and Rice. For some reason, my mom had that record. I don't know if it was to influence me or something, but it was that. And my mom used to she had a Le Mans convertible, and we would always jam out in the car. Like, she'd crank tunes, and me and my sister and my mom would always sing along. And that was like my first band was called the Cheerios. That was me, my mom, and my sister singing in the car to get groceries.
Yeah. Can you remember the first time that music moved you somehow?
Wow. You know, anytime there's a question with remember, it's hard for me at this age. I'm on the dark side of 40, but yeah, I remember when I was a kid going to the 4th of July carnival in your hometown. I remember some band was playing like Kool and the Gang Celebration, and it was the first time where like I felt the energy of music and people dancing around. I didn't really understand it because I was just a kid, but there was something there that was really exciting.
You know what's crazy is just about 2 weeks ago, I was walking through Publix, and that song came on the radio. And when it did, the guy that was down the aisle from me started kind of dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of nodded at each other. And then I went around the corner, and there's this woman. She was kind of dancing.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, everybody in Publix was dancing
to
this song.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's crazy, the power of music.
Right.
Okay, let's turn to your first song. What do you have?
You tell me. What have I got
right? Careful with That Axe, Eugene.
Oh,
by
yeah.
Pink Floyd.
Yeah, this is a good story. When I was the Pink Floyd The Wall came out in 1980, which meant I was 11 years old. Whatever grade that is, I don't know, third, fourth grade.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a music teacher, and I don't even remember her name, but I remember her playing Pink Floyd for us. And I don't think she was allowed to. Like, I mean, it wasn't that she wasn't allowed to, but she was kind of like...
It wasn't part of the curriculum.
Looking down the hallway, making sure, you know, and she was kind of like trying to tell us, like, this is a story about... This rock and roll guy who's been kind of been pushed to the edge of his sanity and the crazy whirlwind life that happens in rock and roll, and that song has, you know, samples of glass breaking and stuff like that. And I think at some point he says, careful with that axe, Eugene. But she was like playing the song for us and then kind of explaining it as the song was happening, like what was happening. Because, you know, Pink Floyd songs kind of play like a play, you know, where they're acting out a certain scene. And she was kind of describing that. And being as a whatever, 12 or 11 year old, you know, that was really like my first open, like really opened my eyes to like there's this whole crazy world out there, you know, beyond the safe suburbs of Palatine, Illinois.
All right, this is One of My Turns by Pink Floyd from their 1981 album, The Wall. It's Dave's first song on this episode of Three Song Stories.
This place is bigger than our apartment.
Let me know when you're entering a room. Yes, sir.
Can I get a drink of water?
I was wondering.
You want some?
So this was a third grade teacher?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you're 11, I mean, you've got a daughter, so you would know what 11, well, what grade is that?
No, I mean, 11's like maybe 4th or 5th grade, okay, but not much. I mean, you're not talking about middle school yet.
No, but I thought that was pretty racy
stuff, you think?
For preteens to, you know, hear about. But the funny thing was, it was kind of a narrative to, I mean, I was never in a hotel room and destroyed it with somebody in there, but I've had all those elements.
It resonates with you today.
I've had all those elements of insanity come up at one point or another throughout my life in the future, so it's kind of, you know.
Where's Pink Floyd fit into your music listenership?
Well, I mean, you know, if you don't like Pink Floyd, there's something wrong with your brain. You know, they're just one of the greatest, you know, bands.
How many Pink Floyd songs do you have in your covers repertoire?
You know, I do more obscure stuff.
You got to know a couple of them.
I do What's the Deal off of Obscured by Clouds, which is it's like only a song that I know and like. There was an instrumental on the wall. I always tried to learn that one instrumental that they play, and that was kind of how I got to learn how to play guitar, was trying to learn that there's an instrumental on that wall album too. That's
What is your song list up to these days?
You know,
is it getting shorter as you get older?
You know, once I got past 300, I realized that I was forgetting some on the other end. So
yeah, you're pushing some out.
As I learn more, I forget more, and I'm not getting any younger. I'm on the dark side of 40. It's probably 400 or 500 if I wrote them down, which is something I plan on doing.
Well, I remember you used to have quite a list that was all scribbled and kind of like sort of semi-beautiful mindy.
I did, and I handed it to a club owner to show him what I did, and that was my last copy. So I actually have to go in my own memory and kind of go through and write them all down.
What song have you learned most recently?
Whiter Shade of Pale by Procol Harum. I play that on acoustic guitar with electric kazoo. I do that, you know, that da 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 da. I do that on the kazoo. What's the
most recent song you've written yourself?
The last song I wrote is called Straight Outta Line.
I like that. A little wordplay there.
Yeah, it's got some ship references. About sailing a boat, going in my life is, you know, like I feel like I'm just in the wind, you know, getting blown around. So it's kind of.
You make mixtapes as a kid?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's how I would try and impress girls. I'd give them tapes that had my innermost feelings.
And did it ever work?
No. I don't think it ever worked.
But, did you ever scare anybody off?
Yeah, probably. You know, but I was really into mixtapes. Like I remember for my high school graduation, my parents got me a twin cassette deck, and it had the record player on top. So I would, you know, wait for radio stations to play my favorite song, and I had a pretty good knack for hitting the record button right before it would start, and I would make mixtapes that way off of songs I heard on the radio. I was definitely, you know, when I got my own stereo, I was, you know, definitely off to the races music-wise.
What was the first music you ever owned yourself?
You know, the first albums I ever bought were Dark Side of the Moon and U2 The Unforgettable Fire. And that's only because I was hanging out with my grandmother and she gave me $20 in a shopping mall. And those were the two albums that I thought were, and you know, that they were, The Unforgettable Fire had just come out. And I knew I liked a couple songs on that record. And I knew Dark Side of the Moon was something that I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was a staple of, you know,
the scene, the music scene of that era.
Of music in general, yeah. It was, you know.
When was the last time you bought music that had a physical form?
Before the internet. Because
really?
As soon as the Napster came out and I could get stuff for free, I loved the pirate aspect of it, that I could steal all these bootleg tapes and basement tapes. One of my favorite bands is Ween, and they have a lot of B-side stuff. And a roommate I had, Tori, back in Fort Myers, had all these deep cuts of like Ween and like Tenacious D when they were when they were just playing in bars and stuff, and it was great. And it's a shame because when the Napster went down, I lost all those. I mean, I probably had 4,000 songs on there that was all like this underground kind of recordings. Nowadays, if you go to iTunes, you can get Take It Easy by the Eagles or American Pie, but it's hard to find, you know, those basement tapes and all that other stuff. And that's really, I'm a miner for lost songs and you know, live versions and hidden versions and B songs.
What process did you use to come down to three songs for this show?
I wanted to give you three songs that had wholesome stories that could be on public radio. And
we're
a
podcast, Dave. We could go off the rails.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that. I wanted to just give you some good time feeling stories instead of the, you know, drinking and drugging and all the. That I figured the young, you know, when I was younger, I tried to think back into my childhood and because it was when you described what the show was to me, it really took me a lot of time to sit there to think to actually what was it that was way back in my childhood that sparked me to be where I am today, you know.
You followed the Dead around for a while, right?
Right at the end, I caught the last couple good years, right from 88 to about 1990. Those three summers were really that was when they were really, in my opinion, on top of their game. And then when their keyboardist died, I think that's when Jerry Garcia started to get sick. And you'd see him on the Jumbotron just getting skinnier and skinnier every show, and I just didn't want to watch that anymore. But there was a time when I was a big fan of Jerry Garcia more than I was a Deadhead, you know.
I know you've seen a ton of live music, probably more than anybody I know. I've seen a bunch of live music with you. Do you have a craziest concert experience? I know that's probably hard for you.
Yeah, I mean, one time I was with John Cadillac at a Grateful Dead concert, and it was called the Mud Bowl. I think they still call it that, where it just rained there for 3 days, and we were literally covered in head to toe from mud, and we had to, like, push my car. You know, he would be in the Honda Civic flooring it, and the wheels would be spitting up mud on me while I was pushing the car at, like, a half a mile an hour. And by the time we got out of there, we were literally covered in head to toe in mud.
What year or so?
That would be like 1989, probably. Well, I think was the Mud Bowl in Alpine Valley, Wisconsin. The Grateful Dead would come to town, and you know, I'm just a kid from the suburbs of Chicago. So when the Grateful Dead came to town, all of a sudden it was like the circus came to town, and that's where you could find anything you wanted. It was a society in the parking lot scene there. So it was a kind of a ticket out of the suburbs for me.
Where's the farthest you traveled for a music concert?
Probably Alaska. I saw a Ween concert in Alaska. Flew out there with Tori.
Wow.
And we saw a couple Ween shows, and it was a real good time. We had too much fun, actually. I believe after...
Broke the fun meter?
Well, the lead singer of the band actually went into rehab after those two shows because he missed the plane ride back to the lower 48.
Because he was partying with you?
Yes. My roommate was the bag man for the band. That's kind of how that went. And it was fun for a while, but it got, you know, it kind of ran its course.
Okay, well, let's pivot to song number two, the wholesome Elton John. What do you got for us?
Like I said, the first band I was truly in was the Cheerios, with me, my mom, and my sister driving around in the back of her Le Mans convertible. And I just remember this song coming on, and we were all singing along, and I'm just a little kid. And the train tracks started coming down, and we didn't realize it. And it wasn't until they were like literally like a foot over my head that I had to scream to my mom, like, train, you know, and she finally drove across the tracks because we were kind of just rocking out. And that I just remember my mom saying, "We're the Cheerios," you know, and like, yeah, we're, and that was like, we're a band, you know. That was like the, my first memory of something like that. I just thought that was funny how we almost got hit by a train. Well, mom almost got hit by a train rocking out to that one with us.
Okay, well, let's hear it. Let's imagine that. This is Elton John's Philadelphia Freedom from his 1975 album, Captain Fantastic and the Brown, let's try that again, from his 1975 album, Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. You're listening to Three Song Stories. It's biography through music.
To find an answer on the road.
So you got any love for Elton John in your life as an adult? I mean, is this like somebody you listen to? You ever seen him live? You cover any of his tunes?
I do Crocodile Rock sometimes, you know, but like a song like that, I mean, that when I was a little kid, that was just a song that, like, I remember we were all little kids jumping up on up and down on the bed when, like, my parents would go see their friends. We'd, you know, go in our parents' room and just crank that kind of music, and it just, you know, for the, you know, when you're just a kid, you just got all this energy.
Yeah,
and
wholesome energy.
I remember jumping so high in the bed like I hit the ceiling, you know. Like, that's just, it was just one of those things. But, yeah, I mean, I don't even really listen to that song anymore, but I'm like, if I'm playing a show or something and I'm taking a break, I might put that song on just for old time's sake.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But that's just kind of the beginnings of the first time I ever got into music, point where I would jump up and down and hit my head on the ceiling, you know.
Okay, so album or albums, if you've got a couple that you will always listen to all the way through from start to finish if you put it on.
Well, one you turned me on to was The Refreshments. I think that's a great album from beginning to end.
I've referred to it several times on this show as being one of my top five most listened to albums of all time.
Yeah,
I listen to the crap out of that
thing. And I play a few songs off of that record still. A lot of people don't
know
about
those guys. That's Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy, by the way, out there.
Yeah, and they still play together as Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. They had a contractual dispute, so they can't call themselves the Refreshments.
I didn't know that. I guess I should have looked harder.
They basically still are the Refreshments.
Cool.
For this same, I believe, same guitar player, which is those two
guys
together.
That's
the
key right there. Yeah. Anything else?
You know, I always thought Pearl Jam 10 was a perfect record. I always thought Zeppelin 4 was a perfect record, but it kind of goes without saying. You know, I think that's very rare to do, to be able to write a record with like 10 songs and everyone be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that
is just, you know, to be able to tap into that, you know, and reproduce that over and over is definitely a skill.
You went to Japan, right?
Yeah, for my 40th birthday.
Did you play music over there?
I only did in, like, music stores. I didn't really have any connections. But one thing I learned in Japan, they have a 12-note. They split an octave into 12 notes.
Okay.
Where in America we have 8.
So they've got a whole different thing going.
Well, for them to hear like just 12-bar blues, you know, that to them is really appealing, I think, because they don't really have that time signature when they're brought up. So to them, it's appealing to hear that, because I would just kind of just play acoustic guitars over there, and I would get a lot of interest when I would just start playing like Jim Croce style blues.
You know, did you have
Brown.
A big head of hair at the time?
You know, I don't even remember. I remember having a midlife crisis and wanting to be away from everybody when I turned 40, and that's kind of why I went there.
That's a pretty good place to be away from everybody.
Yeah, it was definitely the most foreign place I've ever been, and it was cool because I got there, and you know, they say in Japan, oh, everybody speaks English. I got there, nobody spoke English, and like it
not
was,
to you anyway.
It took me half the night just to find my hotel, you know. But it was cool because I think I can get around anywhere in the world now that I've tried to get around on the Japanese subway system, you know, where I couldn't even read any of the signs. If you could figure that out, I think you can go just about anywhere.
You know? So you play a lot of music. You play live all the time. Who are your favorite people to play with these days?
To play with, you know, when I play in Florida, I have a drummer I play with, Kopi, and he's really he calls himself Kopi, Copenhagen, I believe. And he's a really good drummer that my buddy Stick Martin introduced me to. And he's really good on sticking on whatever I do, you know. But I actually just started playing with a girl in Wisconsin. Her name, she goes by Anna Jo Banjo. And I'm normally not a big fan of banjo players, but she kind of strums it like a guitar. And it's kind of like the female version of me, kind of edgy. She's kind of a badass, you know, and so I'm actually going to fly back up there in a couple of days, and we might do some more. We played one gig already together, and it went well, so.
Cool. How many songs have you written?
You know.
Approximately.
probably over 50.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a lazy songwriter. You know, I always want to write songs, but you know, I remember Jerry Garcia saying he'd rather brush his teeth than sit down and have to write a song. And I kind of sometimes that's how I feel, you know. But at the same time, I feel compelled to always write new stuff because it just gets old. You know, you have to do it for the sake of evolution. You got to come up with new stuff.
Are you still playing Zip Code Unknown out there on the circuit?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of mileage out of that song because I'm, you know, here I am, you know, like I say, on the dark side of 40. And like when I was in Wisconsin, I'm in my buddy Tom's basement, you know. And it was like when I was there 21 years ago, I was in his mom's basement. So right. I went from one basement to the other in 21 years. I'm staying underground, I guess you could say.
So how do you listen to music mostly? Do you use iTunes? Do you use Pandora? Do you use Spotify?
It's so weird because just in the time I grew up in albums and cassettes, and then it went to CDs, and then I scratched every CD I had. And I've so now how I listen to music is mostly with my phone and a Bluetooth speaker, usually on YouTube, just because it's easy for me to search.
Yeah.
I do like what Pandora does, how it takes an artist and will take similar ones, and that kind of will turn you on to some new music. I do like that. And there was a time I was doing that a lot, but it's always changing, you know, so it's tricky. I've actually tried to get gigs at places where I handed them my CD and they said, we don't take physical CDs here. You need to send us a file.
Yeah.
You know, so it's become a... there's no physical thing anymore where you have a record that you're trying to sell. I mean, people still make them, but, it's just times are changing.
Yeah. I guess you can't really sell CDs at shows anymore.
You can, but it's more for sentimental, you know.
Yeah.
If you want the original CD with the artwork cover, I understand that. But people just don't want all those, and they scratch, you know. It wasn't a good replacement for the cassette, I don't
think. Not for the non-meticulous.
Yeah, and just the fact that, you know, you can have on your phone have access to the internet, and you can have as many songs as you'll want, you know.
So is there a band you've discovered recently that you might want to give a shout out to that you don't think people would necessarily know?
Because I'm playing music a lot, I don't get the time to listen to much, and also because I'm a stage hand and I'm on the backside of concerts a lot, loading in concerts and Broadway musicals. I don't mean to sound dark, but the last thing I want to do after loading in and out a band is to listen to music.
Yeah.
And it's okay because I've ran with the ball long enough on that side, but, in answer to your question, that the newest thing I've been turned on to is a band called Eels, and they've been around for a while. I just found out about them probably through YouTube, and there's some songs that I really like from
that
guy.
What do they sound like, roughly speaking?
You know, it's weird. They've got a bunch of different songs. They've got some almost like industrial, electric, heavy stuff, but it seems like in later years, I think it's just one guy that is the band, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done some more just kind of acoustic singer-songwriter stuff, which I've always been a fan of. All things acoustic, usually.
Is there anything that's really super popular in the mainstream that you are also a fan of, or do you just kind of avoid the super popular?
No, I mean, if I like a song, I like a song. You know, when Pumped Up Kicks came out, I thought that was a good song, you know. If it happens to be a hit song, that's beside the point to me. If I like songs that I like, you know, and play the songs that I like.
So you're not a snob of anti-pop music snob.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's okay, but you know, I like to dig around and find the underground stuff more than the stuff that's put out, you know, to the general public.
Okay, we're gonna move on to your third song. It's what is it? It's Pierre, I Don't Care.
Okay, yeah.
Do you want to tell a story? Do you want to listen? Tell people where this comes from.
When I was just a little kid, I had a little record player that my mom would, I had records, my mom's 45s of the Beatles and Elvis and stuff like that. And for some reason, I had Chicken Soup and Rice. I don't know. I think it was like a double album. And there was this song, Pierre, I Don't Care. And that was the first time I heard a song. And I was, you know, I don't know. It's not that I didn't care about things. I did care about things, but for some reason I could relate to the story of this song about this kid who didn't care, and then he got eaten by a lion or something, and then the lion regurgitated the kid, and then he cared later, and I didn't really care for that part of the song, but I thought I could relate to the first half of the song because...
The part before he got eaten by the lion?
The part where he didn't care, yeah, because it wasn't that I wasn't a caring person as a little kid, but there was a lot that, like, you know, I was raised kind of by the television a lot, you know, and so, you know, you were put in front of, you know, a lot of things... TV dinners and soap operas and things like that that I just couldn't relate to, you know. And I knew it was kind of a bunch of fluff out there in the world, and that was kind of how I could relate to
that. So you related to the I don't care part, but not necessarily the moral of the song.
Yeah, the moral of the song, I thought, I mean, I got what where she was going, and she wanted kids to care in general, but I had a rebellious side, and I wanted to continue to kind of hold my ground, you know?
That's great. Okay, well, this is it. By the way, Chicken Soup with Rice is a song that is so deep in my psyche that when you said it, I was just like... I am 4 years old. I don't have real word memories, but I feel it.
I picked it because it was absolutely one of the first songs I remember, you know.
Okay, well, this is Pierre, I Don't Care by Carol King from the 1975 album Really Rosie. It's also in the movie, which is called Chicken Soup with Rice. It's Dave's third song on Three Song Stories.
Once was a boy named Pierre, who only would say, I don't care. Read his story, my friend, for you'll find at the end that a suitable moral lies there.
Keep standing upside down. I don't care.
We'll never-
Song doesn't make any freaking sense.
No, I don't, you know, it's hard to make it through that one, you know, but when you were a kid, you
I mean,
know,
it's got a lot of epic sort of energy, but I don't get it.
We had longer attention spans back then, you know, you could sit and listen to a record for 30 minutes and not get bored, but it was a rough one, you know, and I don't really get it. Like, did the lion eat him and then barf him back up and then that made him change his mind? What happened?
I think the lion ate him and barfed him back up, but how that connects to now caring is what
right.
I don't get.
You might get eaten. Yeah.
Maybe it's like he gets a second chance. That's like a near-death that's what it was. It was a near-death experience
right.
for the child,
right.
which made him have a moral heart.
Yeah. I wasn't really buying that. You
okay.
know, and that's what I was like. I'm gonna stick to my guns, you know.
Okay. You're still not caring all these years.
Yeah, still not caring. Still, I mean, I do. I care.
Okay. Your life centers around music. Do you ever get sick of playing music? Do you have songs that you have put on moratorium or have killed from your repertoire entirely because
yes.
you're just over them?
Zeppelin 4 is on moratorium.
The whole album?
The whole album. I've just, no. Like,
you've run out of fuse for that one?
If you put on Presence or Coda or one of those off albums, you know, put on Achilles' Last Stand, some you know, but, you know, if I hear, you know, rock and roll or, you know, everyone's always yelling Freebird at you. You know, if I hear that song on the radio, I just immediately turn it off just because I've been overexposed. They're great songs. I've just, you know, you can hear something too much and that's what can happen.
What about on the performing side? Are there songs that you used to perform that now you're just like, no, I've
yeah.
cut it off?
Yeah, when I first started playing songs, I was playing cover songs like Take It Easy by the Eagles.
Right.
You know, now if somebody throws a 20 in my tip jar, I'll still play that song, but I'm moving on to more progressive kind of multi-genre bands instead of just like the classic rock that I was kind of brought up on.
What is your favorite song to play right now?
My favorite song that I play right now, I would say, is the song called Railroad Man by Eels.
Okay, that band you just referred to.
I can really relate to it. It's about how the times are changing and how this railroad man is kind of feeling left behind as the modern world is kind of happening around.
Does that resonate with you a little
bit? Absolutely. Yeah, I'm feeling really old these days. You know, I mean, I still think I got some rocket juice left in me, but I'm not getting any younger. Let's put it that way.
When was the last time you went to a festival?
I went to Melon Jam about 3 weeks ago, which was a 2-day bluegrass festival in Melon, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
And I got to see some old friends up there that I played with. When my rock band in Wisconsin broke up, the remaining members kind of all started to play bluegrass, and there's a big bluegrass scene up there. It's not really my cup of tea. I'm more like acoustic Americana, I would call it. Bluegrass to me is kind of a little conservative, I guess, and I'm just not that good of a picker. Those guys are really fast pickers,
yeah.
And I'm more of what I lack in musicianship, I try and make up for with enthusiasm. But those guys are more about technicality, you know, and playing really fast, 64th notes.
You know. When was the last time you went to Spirit of the Swanee?
It's been a while because one time I went there and my friends were sitting at the campfire and got arrested by some undercover policemen.
Really? That's a crazy story,
and,
Dave.
And took them to jail and I had to spend the night there. And that's when I thought, you know, this festival isn't that fun if I'm just sitting with my friends.
You know, I had a similar experience.
Did you?
Yeah. I haven't been back either.
Yeah, that was kind of the last one we had. You know, when you think you're on vacation or whatever, and all of a sudden undercover cops come up to your campsite and take some of your friends away, it makes you question why you're there, you know.
Yeah. You referred to Led Zeppelin as something that you would always turn off, you know, if it comes on the radio these days, you turn it off. Are there any other songs that are like either because you just hate the song for its musicianship or you have a negative memory with it?
Yeah, you know, there was a time in my life where I did hate songs, and now that I'm getting older, I'm trying to find ways to like songs that I don't even like, you know? Like, I'm trying to be less angry about it, I think, you know? I like a Justin Bieber song, you know?
Wow, it's like a confessional.
I play a Justin Bieber song.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, I think.
But it was a good song. And I didn't know it was even him until I heard it. And I liked it, so I learned it and played it. So I try and find out I try and like what's good in a song these days.
That is so great, because yesterday we recorded an episode and Richard was the one interviewing a friend of his. And his final thought was, don't hate music.
Yeah.
Find a way to love music and either have no opinion or love it, but don't hate it.
Yeah. Now there is, like, you know, I do get tired of, you know, like if I'm hearing like the same old hip hop, I've got this, I've got that, I've got, you know, kind of the bragging kind of music, bragging hip hop. And I like some hip hop too. Don't get me wrong, but you know, that kind of, I got the money, I got the, this is all my stuff, that kind of gets old. But besides that kind of stuff, I like all genres of music.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have. Do you have any final thoughts?
It was just good to see you, and I just wanted to thank my buddy Stick Martin, who drove me a couple hours out of his way. It was a logistical, I don't want to call it logistical, it was a logistical miracle that we could pull this off.
Yeah, no,
I just
flew
into town for a week,
and
he's a busy guy, and we were able to find a few hours to do this, so I'm happy we got to see you again.
Cool. Well, I want to thank my guest, Dave Count, as part-time musician, part-time pirate in the best sense of the word, and an old friend of mine. It's been way too long. Dave, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Mike.
And thanks a million times for making the theme song.
Oh, no problem. No, it was good fun.
We make this show in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the Florida Gulf Coast University campus in Fort Myers, Florida. Our show is co-created and produced by Richard Chinqui. Tara Callaghan is our online content producer. Our executive producer is Chris Duffus. And our theme music was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. Before today's parting tune, remember, we want your song stories, people. It's simple. Just pick a song that will always take you back directly to a memory and a story and send us the song name and the story, whether written or recorded, to mysongstory@wgcu.org. We're going to start using listener stories as parting tunes in episodes down the road. For my parting tune this week, I'm going back to a place called The Porch. And by The Porch, I mean a house near downtown Fort Myers that was once owned by a mutual friend of Dave and mine named Bob. It was pretty much a nonstop party, full stop. Well, one day me and Dave and our friend Hap just showed up with some recording gear, busted into that day's scene, made ourselves at home, and recorded what we called the Porch Session, which wound up being 12 tracks long. This is the song that pretty much laid the groundwork for Dave Cowan being dubbed Dave by us Florida folk. It's a song Dave described as being part of Wisconsin's bar music lore that he'd learned from some other rapscallion musician along the way. Well, he brought it down to us to a place called Liquid Cafe in downtown Fort Myers that was sort of like an artistic home and heart for many. This is Beer, 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 performed live at The Porch by Dave in probably 2004 or so. I'm sure it'll make the perfectionist musician in Dave cringe, but so be it. It is what it was. We were there. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening.
All right, you want to try to do beer again? Take two? Yeah, you can do it from there. It's cool. Here we go. You ready over there? I'm ready over here. All right. Everybody's happy. Oh, everybody getting up.
I have to check my fingers for
the Indian battalion.
I'm playing beer ball. I want to hear.
Let's get some alcoholics in here, for God's sakes. Song is passed down through oral tradition. Well, I used to chew tobacco because it gave me a kick. I'd spit wherever I would go, my friends, they all got sick. So won't you try something different? We'll all have some cheers. Said come with us tonight, Dave, and we'll go drink some beer. So now it's beer, beer, beer. I can smell it when it's near. And it's beer, beer, beer. Oh, let's go drink some beer. We guzzled down two pitchers, they said I had five more. You know I could have drunk another one, but they drug me out the door. They said you don't drink so well, Dave, when you're lying on the floor. So now it's beer, beer, beer. I can smell it when it's near. And it's beer, beer, beer. Oh, let's go drink some beer. He had like really long hair. Well, he looked like an old girlfriend. I couldn't help but stare. He said, now listen to me, Buster. There is still some hope. Said, come with us tonight, man. We're gonna smoke some dope. So now it's dope, dope, dope. Without it, there's no hope. And it's dope, dope, dope. Oh, let's go smoke some dope. Well, we went out a-smoking, this here dude began to roll. Well, we toked a couple doobies and we smoked a couple bowls. But then he pulled out something different, he had a hidden in his stash. Damn, I was so high I can't remember what he called it. Oh yeah, so now it's hash, hash, hash. It'll give your head a smash. And it's hash, hash, hash. Well, then he pulled out some pills, you know, and something he called coke. Well, we snorted and we dropped, and then I had another toke. Well, there was MDMA and there was LSD, and damn, my head felt weird. So by and by there came a time when I went back to beer. So now it's beer, beer, beer. When it's near, and it's beer, beer, beer. Oh, let's go drink some beer. Oh, 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 let's go drink some beer. That sounded like Howard Dean at the end of that one. Then we're gonna go to the bar, and then we're gonna go to another bar, and then, yeah!
next time on Three Song Stories.
It's a blessing for the Tsar. A blessing for the Tsar. May the Lord bless the Tsar and keep him far away from us. That was the...